Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast that takes you into the world of impact innovation and investments in Israel. I am Alina Shkolniko-Schwarzman, and I head impact entrepreneurship for the Edmund de Rothschild Foundation in Israel. On the podcast, I set out to interview top professionals in the field, entrepreneurs, investors, and field builders, and together we take a deep dive into the local ecosystem. Today with us is Vanessa Bertrum, founder and managing partner of Zora, and Ilan Samish, founder and CEO of Amai Proteins. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here with me. Vanessa, we're going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about what is Zora.
Sure. Zora is an impact investing firm that I founded in 2016. And we're looking at Israeli technologies, deep tech technologies that help the world's largest companies solve critical challenges, major pain points that they're feeling in doing what they're doing more healthfully, more sustainably, and more resource efficiently.
How did you come to the idea of starting an impact fund?
I think my whole career was really looking for that intersection of merging together sort of social change and environmental change with business. So started with a, you know, background in investment banking in Mexico City, started my own company working with a low-income audience in Miami for several years. And it was about 8 years ago that I was growing frustrated with the small scope of the impact I was having with my impact company in Miami, and looked around and got to know the Israeli ecosystem and thought there's no better place in the whole world to be able to work with scalable tech companies that can reach hundreds of millions of people.
And do you feel the same way now, 8 years into it?
I feel even better about it. I think, you know, Israel is a total Disneyland for impact investors, and especially to be investing in deep tech, in sort of business to business solutions. I think we have the best ecosystem in the entire world to be doing the kind of work that we're doing.
And part of this ecosystem are great ventures such as Amai Proteins. Hi, Ilan.
Hi, Alina.
Tell us a little bit about what you guys do. You're a portfolio company for Zora, that we know, but other than being a portfolio company?
Indeed, I'm proud that our first equity investor is Zora, after they did a very comprehensive and very well-focused due diligence. And Amai is fixing our food system one protein at a time. The first use case is a sugar substitute. So we have a computationally designed hypersweet protein, which replaces sugar in a sustainable way. It's tasty, it's healthy, it's cost effective, cheaper than sugar in sweetness units. And we are now moving to large scale production and into the market.
You have to take this down a notch for me. What is fake protein?
It's a designer protein. It's a hypersweet protein. So we have one taste receptor in our oral cavity. All the sweeteners activate it. And there are apparently 200 different proteins, which are also with a sweet taste. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the need for plants is what? You have all the water in the world, all the fertilizers in the world, but you fight over sunlight. A tall canopy captures all the sun. So in the shade of the jungle, the limiting force is actually sunlight. You have their shrubs, which have red fruits, just like lipstick, and the sugar that was good enough in the apple to seduce in the Garden of Eden is no longer good enough. Everyone has apples, you need something better. So all along the jungle, from West Africa to Malaysia and China, you have sweet proteins. And they are much sweeter than sugar. However, they are not stable and they are not identical in taste to sugar. We took that protein and we said something very simple. This protein lives in paradise. However, the mass food market for a protein is a hell of an environment. So let's learn from proteins which do live in hell. And you do have life in hell. Where you have life, you have proteins. You have life in the Dead Sea, in hot springs, deep in the ocean, in acidic swamps. And let's design a new novel protein which will be fit for the mass food market. We did that. We got some grants from Google and others for cloud computing. We build a new protein and then we produce it using microorganisms, using yeast or other microorganisms in a precision fermentation, very sustainable way. We made the world's sweetest protein, which, depending on the food matrix, between 35% and 70% of sugar reduction, and you will not feel that it's not full sugar. So we are not competing with a diet market. We are competing with a full sugar market. The biggest pain point of the industry is sugar overconsumption, actually is the largest cause of non-communicable diseases. And we are giving it a fight in a global way.
And Vanessa, how did you find them?
I don't recall. Actually, you know, we had met Elon probably 2 years before we invested. So we were following his work for a long time. But I think for us, it's really Amai and Elon's work is really emblematic of sort of our, forgive the phrase, sweet spot of what we're looking for as investors. One is that it's a deep technology coming out of a lab and research. And Elon has, I don't want to underestimate, over 20 years plus of research experiences. And it's one of the, you know, leaders in his space and globally. The other piece we're looking for is that there's a massive market for this product. There's a lot of, you know, technology risk in the companies we invest in. There's a lot of scale up risk. So we need to know that if we can, you know, hit technology and hit scale up, that there's a massive market waiting for us. The third point is that we're looking for B2B solutions, solutions that the world's largest companies, Fortune 100 companies, are saying, this is painful for us right now that we can't solve this. And in doing our due diligence on Amai, one of the world's largest food companies, you know, said to us, this has been a priority for us for the past 3 years. And of 200 solutions that we've evaluated, only Amai and one other are providing us with the solution that we need. And it's interesting as an impact investor now to see there's a convergence of, I would say, regulatory changes. You know, this is a time in the world when, you know, I think 18 different countries have implemented sugar taxes because they understand the toll that diabetes and obesity are taking on their health budget and on their population. And also a change of consumer demand and people understanding the impact that sugar has and looking for alternative sugar solutions. So it's a, you know, $90 billion market, the sugar market. And we believe the trends are in our favor and that we've found a really brilliant team to come up with a great solution that works well with current production.
So you spoke about what's important for Zora when choosing a company, but are you always choosing companies that have mission lock? Because Amai is obviously a mission lock company because I'm guessing you can't do other things with the fake protein aside from sugar.
It's not a fake protein. It's a designer protein.
Sorry. Designer protein.
So actually, we have in our pipeline additional proteins for the meat, the plant, and the milk space. In every place where there is a protein that is good in nature, but has a gap of fitting it to the mass food market, whether it is stability in the broad sense, temperature, pH, acidity, and fat environment, allergenicity, cost, we can redesign the protein to make it fit for the mass food market. So actually, sugar reduction is just the beginning.
But it will always be a part of the sustainable solutions, right?
Yes. We grow things with the oldest technology in the book, which is fermentation. Whether it's beer, wine, or yogurt, those are fermentation products where we eat or drink everything that went into the fermenter. In our case, we do precision fermentation, which means we add a layer of harvesting where we harvest out of the bugs which make our protein. We harvest the protein, so it's a pure protein, GMO-free protein. At the end of the day, we get a white powder, and we're in the business of selling a white powder that makes people happy.
Sounds interesting. I don't know if all impact investments in white powder would be considered impact, but it will always be, from what I understand from you, solutions that replace things that are very challenging to us today.
We have a lot of impact. Actually, many companies struggle in what sustainability development goals they embrace. In our case, it's what SDGs we don't embrace. Because on one hand, obviously, the metabolic syndrome, which is the biggest health concern of humanity, non-communicable disease health concern, is because of sugar overconsumption. On the other hand, sugar is a huge pollutant of air, land, and sea transportation. And in addition, sugar affects the most lower socioeconomic class. So we are actually in so many different SDGs that we don't know what to choose. In all of them, we have measurable parameters to move ahead.
And it will be the same with meat, and it'll be the same with dairy.
Yeah.
Going back to the question, this is obviously a mission lock company. Are all of your companies mission lock companies? And also if you can explain what mission lock companies are.
Sure. So when we look at the impact that an investment we're going to make, whether the company will be having, we have a very high threshold for our expectation of that company. We're looking for companies that are having significant impact across climate change, environment, health access, and food security. You know, or this question of how do we feed sustainably 10 billion people in 2050? And for us, we're sizing each of these problems, and we want to know that the company that we're investing in has potential to solve at least 1% of that problem globally within 5 years. So for instance, Amai, we looked at the amount of sugar overconsumption on average per person. And with Amai's sort of projected production over the next 5 years, they're at 0.8% of, you know, replacing sort of sugar overconsumption.
In 5 years?
Within 5 years. So for us, we have a very high threshold of our expectation of the company. You can look at it and say 1% of a massive problem, but we look at this and say this is a team of starting out, you know, 8 scientists in a lab in Rukovod, and how amazing that these small companies can have this vision and this kind of scale. I think that we are always looking for mission lock in our due diligence memo that we put together. That's one of the questions that we ask ourselves is what is the risk that this company could change directions and decide they want to serve a market that doesn't have impact? I think just because we are so demanding in the scale of the impact we're looking for, it's unlikely that there would be incentive to do that.
So we spoke a little bit about the company, but let's talk about you. What brings a scientist to build an impact company?
So actually, it's mission and it's meaning and it's doing something which I'll be happy to get up in the morning and do it. I don't have a bachelor degree. I studied in the Tel Aviv University Interdisciplinary Program for Fostering Excellence. And there already I did most of the MBA, which I never finished, just like many other sciences which I studied, and did the usual track of PhD at Weizmann, postdoc at UPenn, back in
academia.
Oh
yeah,
academia.
Everybody does this. Yeah,
no
the
big
usual
deal.
Every
tenure
day.
Track and was already deep in the academia. I put out a book on computational protein design. The first edition was 62,000 downloads. Now second edition is on its way. And after that, I, for the first time in my life, had trouble to sleep at night, because I thought there is this amazing technology and we need to use it not only for writing papers in academia, but actually for doing something meaningful. Now, because already when I was a student, I founded what became the world's biggest, most important conference on computational structural biology, I knew about sweet proteins and I thought this is an amazing problem that if I succeed to solve it, it will make a huge impact. On the personal side, my twin sister always ate less than me and always was, still is, wider than me. And I was ashamed if I wanted ice cream or something, I couldn't do it next to her. I had to do it and I had to be shy about it and not tell her, because otherwise she would become heavier because of me. So I had this obsession about sugar, and voila, suddenly all my academic career seemed less important if I can solve this huge issue. So I resigned from academia. My parents thought I'm totally nuts and something happened to me. I didn't know how to build a startup, whether to do it with a Weizmann Institute or with some private angels, but I decided that I need to be very focused on the solution. And for that, science is not my bottleneck, but rather industry. So I went to the Strauss Group Kitchen Hub Incubator, the only food tech incubator at the time. And I told them, I have an idea. They told me, you don't have a proof of concept, you're nuts, but if it works, it's nice, but it's only an idea. And then David Nini, the CTO of the incubator, the dad of Achinoam Nini, sat with me into the night. They asked all the names on my CV about me, and they decided to give me a chance. And here I am with 25 people. We are expanding now, 9 PhDs. Already double-digit number of fee-bearing agreements with the world's biggest food and beverage companies. And within less than 2 years, we will begin sales.
So we spoke about the company. We spoke about you guys. Let's take a step back and talk about the macro trends. First, I want to start with the macro trends in your field, Ilan. When you look forward, let's say 10 years from now, Vanessa said you're going to do 1% by 5 years, but so let's do 10 years from now. What are the macro trends in your field that you're seeing that are going to really I don't want to say change the world because I feel like that's very dramatic, but change the world.
I'm not being modest about the fact if I'm not changing the world, it's not interesting. And actually, the goals that Vanessa put out are for me not ambitious enough. So if we look at the markets, a field of precision fermentation, making proteins or other substances by microorganisms, is now booming. Impossible Foods, Perfect Day Foods, and Unilever are the three only companies where you have an ingredient, something that you write on the label that is made out of microorganisms, but you have many, many more where you have processing agents. The most known one is chymosin. All of the cheese in the world is done by such a protein. Alternative meat is a reality. The only question is when exactly it will happen, and so does alternative milk and plants which are made in a more sustainable way. Actually, if we look in the field of another sweetener, stevia that is today done by fermentation, by Cargill and by DSM, which have a JV, a joint venture between them, cost half the price of stevia that is done by agriculture, and it is much more reproducible, and it's not a mixture of different compounds, steviol glycosides, but rather a more pure material which has a better taste than stevia. So that's just one example. On the other hand, you have today access fermentation capacity, food-grade fermentation capacity. So unlike other companies which have a big bottleneck of building a huge infrastructure for production, we can enjoy the infrastructure which is found in the market. And that's beyond the point that big breweries, the biggest one such as AB InBev, is now devoting a huge effort to change from fermenting beer, which is without oxygen, to fermenting for precision fermentation, which is with oxygen. They look 30 years away into feeding Africa and the third world, but there is no other solution. We need to feed the world. We can do something which is short-term economical, which is putting tons of pesticides, doing transportation, which is very low impact. But on the very pure economical level, if we don't incorporate impact into what we do, the long term is a catastrophe. So I don't see impact and economics as going as two separate things, but actually in the medium and long term going very much together.
And on that note, Vanessa, of impact and economics, I want to go to you and ask, what are you seeing as the trend of, well, impact and economics, but 10, 20 years from now? Because now we're still a baby ecosystem here in Israel.
For sure. But I think we're part of a much larger global trend, which is that people are starting to recognize, and we're starting to have data, that good companies actually produce better and good financial returns. It's just in the past few years that I think both in public markets and in private markets, we're starting to have empirical evidence of this. But, you know, one of the most famous and successful IPOs of last year was Beyond Meat, which was a company obviously founded with an environmental and health and animal welfare mission. And we're starting to see that other impact funds, public and private, are outperforming sort of mainstream peers. And it's not surprising when you think about companies that have paid attention to how they treat their environment, how they treat their employees, how they deal with their customers. It's not surprising that there's a beta in that space, and we're starting to see that more. I think increasingly companies will be held accountable for the environmental impact that they're having. We're not great at this in the United States, where I'm from. Hopefully, you know, other countries will lead the way. But as we have more transparency, social media has helped a lot with this. These companies can and need to be held to task for the negative externalities that they're creating, particularly in the environment and our health.
If I may just add on top of what Vanessa said, I think it comes from really the people. And you can see in some countries, you have a Green Party that is becoming bigger and bigger. But on the personal level, you see that, for example, the beverage market, which is a huge, huge market, is going down double digit in the last decade because people are not willing to continue and drink something that kills them. So on one hand, if we talk about the U.S., you have very high health costs and you have some crisis related to health. On the other hand, you have subsidies to high fructose corn syrup, and the beverage market is going down with more and more countries putting sugar tax, but also the education and the understanding is that sugar kills you. So I think it really comes both bottom up and top down.
And with that, are there specific challenges that you think that we still need to solve for it to really be a meaningful revolution?
Listen, I used to think that everything could be done with sort of power of the market and consumer education. I'm increasingly a fan of regulation. I think a lot of these issues, market forces cannot solve alone. And more importantly, we don't have the time for the market education for them to happen. So I never thought I would say this, but I'm increasingly in favor of regulation in a lot of these spaces.
I think regulation is not only about tax. And today you have more and more countries embracing sugar tax, but it's also about warnings. For example, Israel took the Chilean model of putting red labels over high sodium and high fat and high sugar. And immediately, the food and beverage industry, when it was not something specific to one company, they all reformulated thousands of different things in order to lower the sugar, in order to be out of these labeling. So whether people began to buy less because they see it has a red label is one side. The other side is once you give something which is general to everyone, it's not discriminative to one company or another, the food and beverage company doesn't want to poison us. They want to feed us. They also want to make a profit. So it has a two sides, and I think it's just going to increase.
Another trend, I think, and that we saw with the MyProteins and appreciate about Elon's work, there's a strong emphasis from the beginning of making this cost competitive with sugar. So I think whereas 5-10 years ago, the majority of sustainable solutions were 40-50% more, even more, and are counting on the consumer to make the right decision, we can't count on that. We're looking for, massive companies to say this makes sense from a financial position from us, not just from a doing good and health and environment. So, we're also looking for companies that have that cost parity with the mainstream product.
So you think that that challenge is going to solve itself, let's call it?
I think the solutions that are able to focus on price parity will be the winners. I think the companies that are still have niche solutions will continue to be niche products.
In our case, it's a strategy from day one. We did not want, and we could go already to the market, be in the market already. But for example, we did not want to produce an E. coli, which doesn't have good consumer acceptance, although scientifically it's totally fine. We did not want to have a premium price. We went from day one into the mass food market. That's also why we don't do sugar elimination, but we do sugar reduction. And whether it is 35% or 70% depends on when we can reduce sugar on one hand, but maintain the full sugar sensory profile. We have 20 super tasters, which come several times a week to us, taste what we do in a blind way with a statistician to check that we are all kosher as to fulfilling the full sugar sensory profile. That's a big challenge.
Can I be a super taster?
Are you
a super taster?
I've tried to be a super taster. I thought I would be a super taster. I was not a super taster. It's what percentage of the population,
Elon? It's genetic. So 5% are really super tasters because we did not screen only the top 5%. So our head of sensory evaluation tells me it's not a super taster panel. It's just a very good tasters panel. You have two tests. In one test, you get four different small things with water. With one of them, is always a different taste. In one case, it's bitter. In one case, it's sweet. In one case, it's acidic. And you need to decide which one it is and what taste it is. Some people will always know, some will not. In another test, all eyes are credited test, you get a bunch of different cups with 2, 4, 6, 8, 10% of sugar. You learn them, then we take them away. We give you one of them. We ask you which one it is. It's amazing to see that people are very different as to their tasting abilities. And this has nothing to do with what they think they are. This is actually mainly genetic.
I thought enjoying food was enough to qualify me, but I clearly, my tongue was not nearly as talented as the rest of the panel.
We're going to do a quick round and then go and see if we're super tasters. I think that this is our plan for the day.
Perfect.
So for the quick round, we're going to do quick questions, quick answers. First question, what is a book or a podcast or however which way you consume content which you would recommend our listeners?
There is a book on computational protein design. It's obviously the most interesting book in the world.
It's just your kidding book.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
We will put a link on the website for those of you who want to read about protein computational design.
While we're on the product of food, I will throw out a book called Food Fix by Dr. Mark Hyman that talks a lot about the existing food system and what needs to be reformed.
I think that's a new book by Rob Lustig, Metabolical. Rob Lustig is a pediatric endocrinologist. His talk on YouTube got 13 million views, and he's a big activist of explaining through science why sugar overconsumption is such an issue. And his latest book is an amazing book that is a popular science book to read for everyone.
I think that sounds a little bit easier for the listeners, at least for me. What company outside of the Zora portfolio would you choose as a recommendation to follow or you inspire to look at? It can be local or global.
I think a local Israeli company that we really like and follow is Olive Farms, another company in the Kitchen Hub portfolio that's doing cultivated beef. Obviously, the production of beef is a huge environmental challenge. And it's been amazing to see companies like Amaya and others really help make Israel, you know, leading food tech sort of destination in the world.
I will recommend another company from the Kitchen Hub, which is Better Juice, actually iAngels, which led our Series A. We just completed over $11 million and that on top of four active grants that we have with Singapore, with Europe, with Israel. Better Juice reduces sugar from juice. Juice is, on one hand, has a lot of benefits, but on the other hand, has the same level of sugar as any soda. And they do it in a way of fixed enzymes, and they get at the end of the day a juice which is with less sugar. Obviously, then in some cases you want to bring the sweetness back, so we are very synergistic with them.
Very interesting. And my last question to you, and I hope you will answer this honestly, what is your least social or environmental habit?
Definitely airplanes. Carbon footprint from airplanes is terrible. And during COVID, I'm embarrassed to say I've been using a crazy number of plastic cups from getting coffee every day.
This is hard to say, but probably simply driving and not using public transportation.
Well, we always do this so that other people know that even people who work on the next generation of meat, sugar, and dairy and work to save 1% of every large problem still have some, let's say, not great habits.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being with us, both Vanessa and Ilan, and really a fascinating interview. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You've listened to another episode of Double Impact. We could not have created this podcast without our producer, Idan Magadish, and production assistant, Ruth Moati. This episode was edited by Daniel Cohen, and Evatar Elad is our marketing specialist. I want to thank the Edmund Rothschild Foundation for supporting us and Impact Nation for all of the help. Thank you to Google Campus for hosting us. You can listen to all of our other episodes on your favorite podcast app. Please rate us so that others can find us as well. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you on the next episode of Double Impact.